whackness in the name of blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
One of the things, I'm not joking when I talk about White History Week, one of the things that most afflicts this country is that white people don't know who they are or where they come from. That's why you think I'm a problem. But I am not the problem. Your history is. And as long as you pretend you don't know your history, you're going to be the prisoner of it. And there's no question you're liberating me, because you can't liberate yourselves. We're in this together. And finally, when white people, quote-unquote white people, talk about progress in relationship to black people, all they are saying and all they can possibly mean by the word progress is how quickly and how thoroughly I become white. I don't want to become white. I want to grow up, and so should you. Thank you.
July 16, 2008, hottest show in the diaspora. This hour, we're speaking to Nicole Shivers, co-author of Maddening Behaviors, Some I Hear, A Lot I See. Glenn from Philly is going to call in. He and I are going to defend short selling. And I think I may get a little bit into something we hadn't talked about, the feature of Teddy Forsman in the Wall Street Journal last week.
Saying what if, man, if I get a shot, I can make it to the top. Damn, what if I got on some pretty boys like Puffy, then the hood, man, they just wouldn't love me. If I wore a suit every day like Jay-Z, think I'm on my head and went crazy. If I put diamonds in my teeth like Baby, I wouldn't stand a chance of trying to sell like Shady. If I put out joints like AZ, every chance to get, they try and play me. But I move around with a little, try to stunt a f***ing speed. If I st- all day like Snoop do, I see the world different through my dilated pupils. If I bust dance moves on you like Usher, to say 50, that ain't gangsta. Man, I'ma just keep doing what I do, cause can't do me better than I do. Man, I watch the sun go up and calm down, saying what if. Man, I watch the tide roll and it roll out, saying what if. Only I play the block trying to get my f***s off, saying what if. Man, if I get a shot, I can make it to the top. Damn, what if. What if I had blockbuster flex like Will Smith, and all the backpacks love me like Mos Def? I'd probably be a cool like Ice Cube. Picture me in split right now, looking so cool. What if I was a low key, just laid back, hustle to keep a homie around, somebody to hold it. Man, what if Haley Berry was my next baby mom? And I get that child support up with no problem. If I caught a case of jump bail, I'd get caught, cause I'm that everybody know from New York. What if I was a new rapper you didn't know? You be saying, damn, that kid got a sick flow. What if I just cruise through your hood on 22s? Bumpin' Curtis Mayfield, I'm Marvin, so smooth. And if I let the top down on the saw, yeah, that'll make you sick to your stomach, I'm sure. Man, I watch the sun go up and calm down, saying what if. Man, I watch the tide roll and it roll out, saying what if. Homie, I play the block trying to get my f***s off, saying what if. Man, if I get a shot, I can make it to the top. Damn, what if.
July 16, 2008 edition, Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. It is an absolute joy to come before you all each week. And I want to express that. I don't know if I share my appreciation with you all as much as I could or should. Let me catch up on your posts. Maurice from Philly. He said, I am not a Sixers fan, but I do believe that if Elton Brand is 100% healthy, they will do well. I agree. A shooter will help their chances in the East. No, sir, Brother Maurice, you didn't say it right. A Caucasian shooter I want a white man shooting my three-pointers, and I'm nominating two, J.J. Redick and Steve Novak from Houston. J.J. Redick from Orlando. Brother Ed Stefanski, Sixers GM, please make it happen. Kubuka from Sacramento says the 13th Amendment equals Phoenix jails, Section 1. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as a punishment for a crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. And then he goes into Section 2. 13th Amendment, that's what's going on in Phoenix. A whole generation of men in Phoenix, 17 to 35 years of age, missing. You don't even see them in the barbershops. Glenn from Philly says, short sellers play a valuable, very valuable service. It's like a check and balance in the market. Also, I'm sure you have a gangster of the week, but I want to nominate T. Boone Pickens, who made billions on oil and is now promoting his clean energy company that's supposed to take us off of it. Glenn, I did not have a gangster of the week, but T. Boone Pickens, I will accept that nomination because he is gangster enough now to be promoting wind energy. As Glenn says, this white man made all his money off of oil and now he wants to move toward wind and clean energy. T. Boone Pickens, a strong front runner for gangster of the week. I saw his op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, Glenn, as well. Brother Aaron from Nashville, he says, peace, family, miss you all. Love of yourself is what will allow you to unite with the rest of your human family. It will be the brothers and sisters in the South that are going to start the revolution in motion. Peace. Check out timewatchers.com. Kenosha from Clinton. I think that's Mississippi. I'm not sure. But Kenosha says, personally, I don't think Youngberg is sincere in his apology to dark-skinned women. He is simply trying to save his career or lack thereof. On a deeper note, though, that is one reason I don't look to most rappers for insight. More likely than not, you will be disappointed if you do. Well, two rappers that I think do have insight have dropped on the same week. That's David Banner, the great David Banner, and Nas Escobar. So, Kenosha, give Nas and David Banner's albums a chance. Perhaps they have the insight that Young Berg lacks. Dawood from Dawood City. He says, the Obama speech, I caught a quick bite of it first. But when I heard the whole speech, it was okay. E-Props has appeared from Flatbush. E-Props enjoyed Mosh It Up, which I played earlier from KRS-One and Just Ice. By the way, if you can find three hottest songs from a collaboration, then going way back, Licking Lyrics and Mosh It Up by KRS-One and Just Ice. I will play whatever song you want me to right on these airwaves. Sitting Spook from East Orange said, I read the Wall Street Journal article on the cost of jails in Phoenix, Arizona. I also read the article by McDonald. Talking about Heather McDonald. I think that's her name. Do you think the thinking behind McDonald's article is the prevailing view on dealing with crime in urban areas? Is McDonald a policing view of the future of urban development? Maybe. If you notice, Senator Obama quickly talked about having more cops on the streets. After he talked about, I think it was ex-offenders, he said something else about cops real quick. That was slick. Did y'all catch it? Dawood says, I'm from the ground again, I'm wondering, in other cities, are they releasing prisoners back in society? Because I've seen a lot of brothers I haven't seen in like 2 years. At least I asked them, did they learn any skill? And some said yes, and they had jobs, but they seem to be laughing and playing with their identity. I'm wondering, is anyone in the studio audience experiencing this? My thought is, what have they learned? Yes, Dawood, brothers are coming out. The reentry of ex-offenders is a big issue that we're going to have to deal with. Shane thanks me for playing the Obama speech. He had not heard all of it. Shane from Houston. Elijah from Miami, he says, when I go back and review Barack's speeches before a black audience and also his speeches to other groups of people, it seems to me that Obama is using the Southern strategy on black folks, but it is so slick, most of us are not picking up on it. I think Elijah has a point. I mean, I caught the quick reference that Obama made to more cops. I'm 30% thinking there's a 30% chance I may vote for Obama, a 55% chance I may vote for Cynthia McKinney, and a 15% chance I may vote for the other black candidate, Bob Barr, Brother Bob Barr, the Libertarian candidate for president. So this book right here, Maddening Behaviors, Some I Hear, A Lot I See, by Tara Nichols and Nicole Shivers. I highly recommend this book. If you want an enjoyable, light read, when I say light, I mean in terms of the reading experience. I read it in two sittings. I finished it Sunday. Only 109 pages. I'm still marveling. I don't know how they were able to do this. Each chapter is a short story. Talks about 11 different women who have gone to Africa from America for adventure. Each chapter is an education of a different aspect of the problematic relationship between blacks and others in Africa, blacks and others in America, and blacks on both sides of the continent. Very unique book. Some of you authors out there will be able to appreciate what they've done. By the way, they will be at the Harlem Book Fair this weekend. I highly recommend this book for anyone who wants an experience, an enjoyable experience that teaches lessons without being overbearing. This is definitely not the kind of book that I'm accustomed to reading. I am now officially a convert to short stories, so I might have to write one myself. This is excellent. Very inspirational book. The MySpace, myspace.com/maddeningbehaviors, M-A-D-D-E-N-I-N-G B-E-H-A-V-I-O-R-S. I'm going to announce today, this book is the official book of the BlackElectorate.com International Affairs Initiative. Any thoughts on the Obama speech, send them in, pro or con. Again, much controversy over my interview with Davey D, where I predict the next president of the United States, POTUS, is John McCain. Davey D knows my predictions. Davey D is one of the few who's kept track. I'm like 4-1. So Davey D was shaken when I told him that John McCain is going to win this thing. Elazar says, what's the book, the name of the book again? I just got in. Can you spell the first word? Yes, sir. Elazar from Brooklyn. The first word in the title of the book is maddening. The full book title is Maddening Behaviors, Some I Hear, A Lot I See, by Tara Nichols and Nicole Shivers. Hold on, let me put some hot club music, dance music from the 80s on for you real quick. Right, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure of mine, if this person can hear me clear. Mr. Cole Shivers, is that you? Hold on. Okay, one more time. Mr. Cole Shivers, are you there?
I'm here, Cedric. How are you?
Great. You're getting a standing ovation right now, which you can't hear, but thank you for joining us. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
It is a pleasure. Too bad that your co-author, Tara Nichols, is not available. But we will bring her on at a later time. But congratulations on a job well done. I don't know how did you get this in 109 pages?
I don't know. We just kind of came together, wrote stories, and then finally condensed them.
Now, let me read a portion of the back of the book, and then I want to tell you explicitly why I like this book, why I think it's so important for our people to read.
Okay.
Now, on the back of the book, you state, 11 young women leave America to find adventure in Africa. Seeking magic, purpose, and friendship, they settle with host families in the villages and urban centers of South Africa and Mozambique. And then you give an account of each, a handful of the 11.
Right.
Now, let me read you something that I found that has always stayed with me. This is a New York Times article from 2003. This is written by a black American Muslim who was traveling in Egypt. Here's what it says. It says, one night during Ramadan, a skinny hustler in a knockoff American clothes joined us for dinner. He was one of those 20-something Lotharios who haunt downtown Cairo seducing tourists. After dinner, we sat alone in front of the shop. He says, do you know the story of Tupac Shakur? He asked me. I nodded and smiled. I was intrigued that he knew anything about rap and proud that he did. They killed him in the ghetto, he continued. I love all the rap, all the niggas. My face went hot. I told him he shouldn't use that word. Why not, he asked. All the blacks use it. All the blacks have sex and sell drugs like Tupac and Jay-Z. Not since grade school has such talk so upset me. Look at me, I said. I'm black. I don't sell drugs. Please don't be upset, the young man said, offering me his hand. I'm a nigger. I'm a hustler like Tupac. Now, does that qualify as a maddening behavior?
Oh, I think so.
What's the relation to those kind of imagery, perceptions of black people in Africa and vice versa that may pertain to why you decided to write the book? So, from the top.
Well, I think Tara addresses a similar situation in one of her chapters. But while I was in South Africa, there's graffiti everywhere that represented Tupac, Snoop Dogg. And that's one of the first things they ask you, do you know Snoop Dogg? Do you know Tupac? Do you know Michael Jordan? And you hear the music all through, for instance, when I was in the Cape Flats, outside of Cape Town, that's all you would hear is Tupac and Snoop Dogg. So they do have this image of black Americans as it relates to hip-hop.
So,
for better or for worse, it's, you know, it's some of it's true, some of it's distorted.
Right. And the same applies to us. So in the author's note in the beginning of the book, you both write, in the 1990s, we both traveled to South Africa as young women. While it may seem that this collection of stories was plucked from our personal journeys, it was not. Admittedly, our experiences influence our work, but these stories are not about us. They are the testimonies of many people in many possible moments in time, albeit in one small part of this world. So take us, I guess, maybe from your background, how this story developed, which actually grew out of your experience traveling overseas. I believe you went to South Africa, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And this Well, as you know, hip-hop is universal. And growing up in hip-hop, you can't help but be influenced by it. So I wanted to bring the Black American experience with a South African experience. So what better way than to write about it?
Now, you went to South Africa. Was that part of a what kind of program was that? Was it just a regular trip?
It was a graduate school program. I went to Clark Atlanta University. And it was a program, International Training for Women in Development. So it was about 14 students that went to South Africa.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about any of the women that are featured or the characters in this book. Again, it's based upon 11 young women who come from America to find adventure in Africa. And they end up with a very sobering experience sharing and receiving. What are some of the characters?
Some of the characters are Maida Sespooch, who is a Ute Indian from Utah who goes to South Africa and interns in Cape Town, South Africa, where there's a high population of colored South Africans, and she's mistaken for colored, and she gets offended by this. So she doesn't know whether to embrace this so-called privilege of being colored or resist the temptation. So throughout the story, she's struggling with that, and she is trying to relate to colored women as well as black indigenous women from South Africa.
So this is an individual who's Native American, whose appearance would have them, classified as colored generally in South Africa? Okay. So that I thought that chapter was very informative, and I thought that was beautiful how it was weaved together, because it forces you to deal with the reality of our historical struggle, the Native American and Black struggle, at the same time you're dealing with apartheid in South Africa. That was brilliant. You wrote that chapter?
Yes, sir.
All right, you're getting a standing ovation right now for that.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. give me another character or two.
Another character. Let's see. Miss Sadie, who is my militant character, who kind of like a Black James Bond, Black woman James Bond. Okay. She fights against apartheid. She's trained in East Germany. She's down with Mossad and Israel, and she travels the world and looking for love and trying to help her people in South Africa. So that was another good one.
I thought that was a good one. I don't want to give it away. Now, I had to be careful because I'm just an ignorant nonfiction reader of current events and current affairs, so this is new to me, but I thought you all were able to teach powerful lessons about culture, politics, and economics without being preachy or overbearing or doctrinal. Was that was that your goal, or was that just natural?
No, it just happened. Okay. It just happened. We didn't intend to sit out. Like, we have to talk about politics, economics, da-da-da, in South Africa. It just came together like that. But how can you not talk about South Africa and those issues at the same time?
Exactly, exactly. I thought that, well, tell me about Shaquan.
Shaquan P. Jones from Vegas. Shaquan P. Jones was raised in the Gerson Park King Projects in North Las Vegas. And she was raised by her grandmother, came from a broken home, rarely saw her mother or father. And she wins a scholarship to HBCU. And from school, she ends up in this internship in South Africa. So she's trying not to bring her, what should I say, project type manners to South Africa, but they end up coming out.
Now, when I was reading the book, I was very conscious of the worldviews that both sides brought to situation. When I say both sides, I'm talking about the Africans and those that came from America. Did you, how can I say this without, I don't want to offend anyone, but who did you find to be the more ignorant? Is it us over here, or is it our people over there?
Oh.
It's an ignorance battle.
It is, and I can't say which one. I have to say it, they're both, you know, at the same level. They're neck and neck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think that, okay, I'll give you another question. Who is the more romanticized of the two? Like, for instance, one of the things I've been saying on my show is I'm warning many of our beloved Africans to not do by Senator Obama like we did Mandela, ignorantly embracing him, disrespecting the struggles that the masses still had to endure. Do you think that Blacks over here tend to be a little more romantic over things like the African independence movement, or vice versa in terms of maybe Africans enamored with Black culture as represented by the mass media?
I think we romanticize the continent more. So, the mother country and all that jazz. So, but once you get there, you get a reality check. So, but then Black Africans also have their whole deal with Black America. And but I think we tend to romanticize Africa as well, more so.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of the things we talked about in relation to Zimbabwe. Now, I want you to sell books to Mugabe lovers and Mugabe haters, so I don't want your position on Zimbabwe. But how do you think a book like this might inform our view of that saga when we receive reports from the media?
Okay. Well, thank you for asking that question and even suggesting that this book could influence in some manner. I think it would create a positive dialogue among women and college students, and I think it would help break down some barriers and enlighten Black Americans as well as Southern Africans. So,
yeah, I'm glad you said that, because the backdrop of the book is Mozambique, South Africa, in terms of some of the environment and setting. Mm-hmm. And you really can't, to me, understand what's going on in Zimbabwe unless you know what's going on in the neighboring countries. You know, South Africa figures prominently.
Right.
So what are the things you hope to accomplish with the book?
For me personally, it was a creative way to express my experience in South Africa. We didn't set out to get on Oprah or sell a million books. That was not our motivation. It was a book of love, a book of struggle, a book of endurance. Working with another author, there's a lot of sacrifice and you have to compromise on a lot of things. But we just hope this book will be a testament to our experience that would, you know, help future generations.
And you all have a MySpace page. What's the address?
It's myspace.com/maddeningbehaviors.
And you'll be at the Harlem Book Fair this weekend?
Harlem Book Fair on Saturday, all day.
Okay, everyone, be sure. Stop by wherever they... Just look for them. Just shout out, where are the Maddening Behaviors people? And you'll find them somewhere in Harlem. But I don't want to blow it, but there's one chapter in here that is a cliffhanger that had me... I was messed up after I read it. And
yeah.
I'll leave that alone. But The Visitor, Kitchen Tea, these are two of my favorite chapters.
Mm-hmm.
I like Angel Soldiers.
You like Angel Soldiers?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what's the chapter that you just mentioned about the youth?
Oh, Conversations.
Yeah, Conversations. Excellent mm-hmm. chapter. So everyone go out and get Maddening Behaviors. Website, MySpace.com/maddeningbehaviors. MySpace.com/maddeningbehaviors.
Right.
Anything you want folks to know in closing, Nicole?
I just wanted to thank you for having us on. I also heard you announce that we're the official book of the African Initiative.
Yes,
so we appreciate that. Anything we can do further with that, we would be willing and able.
Well, I want them to read it first, because this is the initiative that has the most rhetorical support but the least amount of follow-through. So maybe your book will help ignite some energy behind our Africa diaspora initiative. We're thinking about something like a lobby, something like APAC for Africa, but we'll see if the support is there. But we had a good show on Zimbabwe, and I think your book will help people understand not just what's happening in Zimbabwe, but why we would even need a United States of Africa, and why the relationship between the United States of Africa and a diaspora is very important. So,
yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We love your show.
Thank you. We love you. And tell Tara that she's not off the hook. We'll just have her on at another time.
Yes, we'll do.
Okay, you take care.
Thank you.
All right, Nicole, peace.
Take care. Peace.
That's Nicole Shivers. She's down with Business and Building. Maddening Behaviors. Some I hear, a lot I see. This is the book you need if you want to know what's going on with our people on both sides of the Atlantic. Some of the stereotypes, unconscious imagery that's affecting our relationships. Some of the historical, political, cultural factors on the ground. 11 different perspectives. It's an awesome book. If you can't read this in two settings, there's something wrong with you. Check them out at the Harlem Book Fair. We'll have them on again. The other co-author is Tara Nichols, who was not able to join us today, but we leave a seat at the table for her. Nicole has inspired me. I'm playing Shango right now. Alatunji.
Listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
Dawood says, Cedric, thanks for your recommendation of the book. Classes in session, teacher. This is not to be off. I'm on your KRS-One bandwagon, and I missed it when he was in Dayton. They don't promote him very well. Natasha from Miami. Natasha, what happened? You must have been corporate thugging. There was a three hour gap where we missed you. Natasha from Miami says, did you touch on Erykah Badu and her comments to her haters? No, I didn't. I didn't know what Sister Erykah is saying. Some of you want to know the title of the book. Again, Maddening Behaviors. Some I Hear, A Lot I See by Tara Nichols and Nicole Shivers. MySpace.com/maddeningbehaviors. MADDENING BEHAVIORS. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, online. We have a link on the front page of blackelectorate.com. James from Hayward, California. He says, if Obama doesn't have the courage to get on whites, Jews, Asians, or Latinos about their shortcomings, he should be quiet when speaking to us. We get enough of the one-sided BS from O'Reilly. Tell whites to work on their racism, then you tell me what I need to do. No buck dancing in 08. Obama reminds me of the brother from the movie Sankofa, who was the headman on the plantation who inflicted pain on his brothers and sisters and then had to be comforted by them. If Obama is elected, will we be comforted by him after he bombs Africa to uphold white supremacy or keeps the status quo here? That's James Lynch from Trenton. So the first comment was James from Hayward, California. The second was James Lynch from Trenton. The Jameses. The James boys. Remember Dusty Rhodes and Magnum TA, the James boys? Man, that's some powerful stuff. I'll read that again if you guys want to hear those posts. Both Jameses on both sides of the United States bringing the heat to Obama. They're not feeling that NAACP speech, evidently. Woo. This is Zimbabwe by Miles Davis, Underneath My Voice. Natasha from Miami says, Erykah Badu had to address the so-called fans who feel the need to criticize her for being with child for the third time by a third guy out of wedlock. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know people were bringing it to her like that. Well, I didn't know that. Okay, let me merge together two topics that we've been dealing with. It's a brother who may give us some reports on the ground in Zimbabwe. Obi Egbuna. He wrote an open letter to Senator Obama. I'm going to read this. I'm losing my voice a little bit. It's an open letter to Senator Obama regarding his positions on Zimbabwe by Obi Egbuna. He says, dear Senator and Big Brother, I sincerely hope my letter finds you at the peak of your resistance and in the very best of health and good spirits. The purpose of this correspondence is to engage you and your campaign staff on the issue of Zimbabwe. While the strategic focus of your campaign may differ from previous candidates who were products of the African-American community, Shirley Chisholm, Eldridge Cleaver, Dick Gregory, Jesse Jackson, Reverend Al Sharpton, and Senator Carol Moseley Braun, the obligation to raise and magnify contradictions that directly affect our people all over the world remains a historical obligation that daughters and sons of the African soil do not have the luxury of abandoning. Mr. Senator, because our biological fathers were born and raised in African countries that were colonized by the British Empire, it is only fitting that we intensify a no-holds-barred discussion about the people and government of Zimbabwe. Mr. Senator, while you successfully defeated Senator Clinton in the Democratic primary, the current status of your candidacy for the U.S. presidency is to convince voters aligned to the Democratic Party that you are more electable than Senator Hillary Clinton. The positions you take on issues, especially on issues concerning, the positions you take on issues of national and international character must reflect this. Failure to distinguish yourself, especially on issues concerning developments on our mother continent of Africa, expose that your campaign and everything it appears to symbolize on the surface is only a continuation of U.S. imperialism's unyielding commitment to dominate and exploit every corner of the planet. Mr. Senator, your statement on Zimbabwe, addressed to President George W. Bush, was published on Thursday, March 15, 2007. You then went on to submit a joint resolution with the now deceased Congressman Tom Lantos on March 29, 2007, before the U.S. Senate and Congress, expressing your displeasures with the government of President Robert Mugabe. These are the following remarks from both documents that need to be questioned and challenged. I will begin with your statement on March 15th, 2007. Now, Brother Obi now is reading the statements from Senator Obama's statement, okay? Number one, the true cause of strife. Senator Obama says President Mugabe's disastrous rule remains unaddressed. Two, for years it has been increasingly apparent that the Mugabe government is interested in its own survival and enrichment, not the welfare of the people of Zimbabwe. This is the third statement from Senator Obama. International observers, including the U.S., concluded that the presidential elections of 2002 and parliamentary elections were not free and fair. Obama point number four on Zimbabwe. Within Zimbabwe, the opposition to Mugabe has shown resilience and courage. Point number five, Zimbabwe's economy is shrinking faster than any country in the world that is not at war. Senator Obama's sixth point about Zimbabwe is, Mr. President, the U.S. must continue to stand strongly against the Mugabe government's abuses of power in Zimbabwe. We must join our European allies, the UN, and most importantly, the countries and institutions of the region to press for positive change in Zimbabwe. That means a peaceful democratic transition in 2008 and support for economic growth and opportunity, including the lifting of sanctions once the dark cloud of Mugabe's rule is lifted and Zimbabweans are able again to reach for the new horizon they deserve. Now, that's the sixth point. These are statements that Senator Obama is making to President George W. Bush. Point number seven, Senator Obama says, I call on President Mugabe to release all political detainees and repeal the ban on political rallies, to end the use of violence and torture in jails, permit a free media, and abide by the rule of law. I will address, this is Brother Obi now, I've read all 7 points that Senator Obama made to President Bush. Brother Obi says, I will address and challenge the points of reference from the resolution submitted 14 days after your initial statement. They are the following 2 points. One, whereas U.S. Ambassador Christopher Dell warned that opposition to President Robert Mugabe has reached a tipping point because the people no longer feared the regime and believed they had nothing to lose. And two, whereas the staggering suffering brought about by the misrule of Zimbabwe has created a large-scale humanitarian crisis in which about 3,500 people die each week from a combination of disease, hunger, neglect, and despair. Now, here are the responses that Obi Egbunu makes to Senator Obama's March 15th, 2007 statement. He says, Mr. Senator, to use a term like disastrous to describe what President Mugabe means to Zimbabwe, the southern region of Africa, and the entire African continent demonstrates that blinded political ambition which makes you feel like you must keep a safe distance from President Mugabe, similar in the manner you claim not to identify with Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan, Minister Louis Farrakhan. So he says, I believe it was Minister Farrakhan who endorsed your U.S. presidential bid in February as well. More recently, your former pastor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Mr. Senator, since Zimbabwe was not on the list of African countries you visited almost 2 years ago, what makes you feel you are qualified to recommend what is in the best interest of the people and its government? It's 7 points, family. I'm only going to read three. Here's point number two, Obi Egbunu's response to Senator Obama. He says, Mr. Senator, since you have in the past claimed your entry into politics was a reaction to the injustice of apartheid, maybe you perhaps forgot that apartheid did not just take place in what is commonly referred to as South Africa. This reality meant that the people of Zimbabwe, Namibia, Angola, and Mozambique had to engage in protracted armed struggles to liberate both their land and people due to the fact that apartheid in Southern Africa was perhaps the most fascist manifestation of settler colonialism in Africa's children. Oh, that Africa's children have ever experienced. While 83% of South Africa's land remains in the hands of whites, President Mugabe and ZANU-PF have reclaimed 12 million acres of land and awarded it to 350,000 families in a country where the average family comprises of 6 people. This hardly can be interpreted as the enrichment of a few people. Mr. Senator, you are as guilty of ignoring the 94% literacy rate of Zimbabwe and the appointment of modern Africa's first woman vice president, Ame Joyce Mujuru, and the fact that Zimbabwe remains the only country in the world that has a national AIDS levy council that has resulted in the most significant decline in any Southern African country. In Southern Africa, that region remains Africa's most vulnerable region in the HIV/AIDS pandemic. Point number three, Mr. Senator, you should have one of your staff members pick up the NAACP's report on Zimbabwe's 2002 presidential elections and raise the question why the United States State Department felt it necessary to request this report not be published in the first place. Mr. Senator, you obviously did not receive the following reports of the 2005 parliamentary elections: the African Union, the Southern African Development Community, SADC, Zimbabwe Council of Churches, the Catholic Coalition of Peace and Justice of Zimbabwe. You give the impression, because of both your religious convictions and humble beginnings, that honesty guides your decisions. However, perhaps absorbing the crucial points of these documents will spell out the obvious. On the issue of Zimbabwe, you and your fellow Congressional Black Caucus members are at best genuinely misinformed. Those are the first three points. Let me, I'll read one more. I thought this one was interesting. We're reading Brother Obi Egbunu's response to Senator Obama's position on Zimbabwe. He says, this is fifth point. Brother Obi writes, Brother Senator Obama, he says, Mr. Senator, in a debate with Senator Clinton shortly before the Ohio primary, you assertively said that the current foreign policy of the U.S. government is in complete shambles. When it comes to Zimbabwe, it appears that you, Senator Clinton, Senator Clinton is one of the co-sponsors of the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act of 2001. When it comes to Zimbabwe, it appears that you, Senator Clinton, and Senator McCain, who shares the exact sentiments of Mr. Bush, are all joined at the hip. Mr. Senator, you appear to be extremely naive about the impact that sanctions can have on a country's economy and morale, for that matter. This is ironic because the war in Iraq has been the main battle cry of your campaign, where 2 million Iraqi people have died because of these same types of vindictive and cowardly sanctions. Mr. Senator, while your political superior, Mr. Bush, as well as his British counterpart, Mr. Brown, have not yet declared war on President Mugabe and ZANU-PF, their use of sanctions as an instrument to isolate and starve the people of Zimbabwe until they have successfully imposed their will on them politically is certainly a step in that direction. So, Obi Egbunu is saying, how can you be against sanctions in Iraq and be for them in Zimbabwe? Send your comments in. I'll read them all. Natasha writes, both of the Jameses who criticized Senator Obama. Natasha from Miami says, James, both of you, did you ever hear that before one can tell someone else what to do in their home, one must address their own first? If Obama can't tell black men to step up, who can tell a white person? Please, we as a people never want to have a mirror held up regarding our shortcomings. That's Natasha speaking to both Jameses. James from Hayward, California says, it's not just the NAACP. It's not just Obama's speech to the NAACP. It's his Father's Day speech, the race speech, the speech in Alabama. I think where he tells blacks to fight anti-Semitism, WTF. Y'all know what WTF is. Since when is black anti-Semitism harming Jews? Sumner Redstone harms blacks every damn day via BET. Will he call him out? Unlikely. This is James from Hayward, California. He's bringing a lot of heat. Well, I mean, on the anti-Semitism thing, I will say this. I just find it peculiar that, you know, Russell Simmons and my brother Jay-Z have to make anti-Semitism commercials when no black person can get anybody from the Jewish community to talk about any racist views that some members of that community have toward us. Now, I love the NAACP speech. That's why we played 23 minutes of it. But I think Elijah is correct. I believe it was Elijah from Miami. He said that he believes Senator Obama gets slick with us, talks using a Southern strategy, but many of us don't pick it up. I think James would agree with that. But Natasha is saying, if Obama can't speak to black men, how could he talk to white men? And Natasha says, we as a people never want to have a mirror held up regarding our shortcomings. Well, my litmus test is, any of the people who are defending Obama now, did you defend Bill Cosby? And if you did, then you're consistent. But I just find it funny that a lot of the people who are defending Obama's speech were so much against Bill Cosby when they were basically saying the same thing, although Obama uses much better language, which I really like. I'll tell you something else Senator Obama did that I liked recently. He finally addressed this thing about him being Muslim in a way that didn't diss Muslims. Many Muslims feel that Senator Obama was actually dissing the Muslim community in his weak defense, or his the way he was clarifying that he wasn't a Muslim. People thought he was taking a shot at Muslims or allowing Muslims to be attacked. So finally, on Larry King, this is what happened. Larry King says to Senator Obama, considering that though there's a lot of emails going around, it gets rather terrible. A Newsweek poll shows that 12% of America believes that you're a Muslim and 26% believe you were raised in a Muslim home. A lot of misinformation. How do you fight that? Senator Obama says, well, you know, by getting on Larry King and telling everybody I'm a Christian and I wasn't raised in a Muslim home and pledging allegiance to the flag. And, you know, all the things that have been reported in these emails are completely untrue and have been debunked again and again and again. So all you can do is just tell the truth and trust in the American people that over time they're going to know what the truth is. One last point I want to make. I do want to make a point about these emails, though. And I think this has an impact on this New Yorker magazine cover. You know, this is actually an insult against Muslim Americans, something that we don't spend a lot of time talking about. And sometimes I've been derelict in pointing that out. You know, there are wonderful Muslim Americans all across the country who are doing wonderful things. And for this to be used as sort of an insult or to raise suspicion about me, I think is unfortunate. And it's not what America's all about. So finally, Senator Obama has decided that he can say he is a Christian without leaving the Muslims hanging out to dry or throwing them under the bus. Good job, Senator Obama, finally acknowledging that there is discrimination against Muslim Americans. Oh, man. I've covered a lot of ground. I would be remiss if I did not play this story. It may make some of you tear up. Made me tear up. The Miami Herald has done a very interesting story about young people dying. I'm talking about 15, 16, 17-year-old brothers getting killed. The Miami Herald did a report. The story is up on blackelectorate.com. I want you all to listen to this. And we'll wrap up the show. Any other comments you all may have? Dawood says, I feel bad for Mr. Obama because Mr. Bush is about to hand him some mess. I hope my brother has the strength to battle and to bring some balance. Yeah, in a way, I kind of don't want Obama to win because of the mess he'll have to preside over. And Natasha from Miami says, I did defend Bill Cosby. And my point was, why not have him be able to give criticism? Or would we prefer if only white people criticize us? If we keep acting like absent fathers and the deficiencies in our community, how will they be corrected? I don't expect people to agree with him 100%. Here's the story in Miami. What are we going to do about this?
They told me he was shot from close range, so his everything was all ripped up on his inside. And that's how I lost my son. You know, sometimes you don't want to think it, and you may not want to say it. But you wonder a lot of times, is it because these are black-on-black crimes, why people just kind of, the system just kind of like, yeah, they gonna kill each other anyway.
No reasons for the shooting, no explanations, no heart, it's no love. That's what I found out is over town, no love.
And then the shooting started. My son was trying to be a diplomat. and was murdered for trying to create peace without violence. They didn't just kill my son. They killed a big part of me with just a simple act of violence that probably he thought about for 5 seconds. And he's like changed our lives forever. Everybody's different.
The people that are doing the killings are young guys. None of them are over the age of 25. Maybe even younger.
And it's just got to stop. I'm sick of looking at the news saying 16-year-old killer, another 16-year-old. This is everyday life, and it needs to stop. It needs to stop.
It's like a retaliation. You shoot up this block, we shoot up your block. You shoot up this block, we shoot up your block. But in the midst of all this shooting, innocent people are dying.
And God forbid if they're young. Because if they're young, you're out of gas. Because the justice system, they are so lenient. They are so lenient on these juveniles that it's disgusting. Like, they came into my house and gunned down my son, and then you can just get a plea deal and a bargain. Who in the hell was there to bargain for my son?
And they have a lot of circumstantial evidence. But no one saw him do the shooting. So the case is still at a standstill. And LeBron actually may be set free.
You out of jail. You on probation. You on house arrest. You out of jail on 2 counts of murder for number one. But you at another party. I mean, I just felt betrayed by the justice system. I felt sick to my stomach. Sometimes it makes your blood boil because absolutely nothing you can do. Because when it gets to the courthouse, I mean, it gets to the justice system, it gets in front of that judge, and it's a mess. It's a mess. It's nothing you can do. It's out of your hand.
Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, destruction.
It is sad. It's so sad because If they can only stop and take a look at what's going on and see that it's not worth it. Every weekend, I tell you not a word of a lie, somebody dies.
One day, together.
But I can't help. I'm not as fun as I used to be. I don't want to go. I used to coach Little League sports. So I don't want to be around that many kids. I couldn't bring it back. I couldn't help. I don't protect, and I couldn't protect. My purpose in life was over.
To take a life is nothing now. The value of life is no value of life, because they don't care. That was the hardest thing for me to do, to watch my son get put in the ground. Imagine how I felt.
Marky, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Marky.
We sing happy birthday. 1, 2, 3. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Marky. Happy birthday to you.
Parents are not supposed to bury their kids. Kids are supposed to bury their parents. Our last conversation the day before he died, he explained his layout to success. He wanted to go to a university, so he finished with a 5.0 and got a full scholarship, $30,000 a year from St. Thomas.
He was on another level. He's one of those Tiger Woods of students. You know, they don't come around very often.
But Jeffrey was also an athlete. He excelled in basketball. He was an excellent basketball player. That he had to choose between sports and academia. Now, how many 17-year-olds do you know that would have chosen academia or the academics over sports? This is a leader. This is a leader.
Anybody would be proud to have a kid like Jeff. Positive, encouraging, you know, ambitious, making the most of his God-given talents. He just, you know, he did it all. I mean, he was the whole package.
You think about the potential of Jeffrey and what Jeffrey could have done and the heights that this man could have risen to. Oh, my.
His father was one of his heroes on a list that I gave at the beginning of the year to ask who your heroes were. He mentioned his dad, and he mentioned Martin Luther King Jr.
He wrote me on my last birthday card up on the dresser saying, I look at the man that I want to be every day, but he didn't understand. He was my role model. I wanted to really be like him. I tried to, but I come up short. Yeah, I come up short. I died right now, it'd be a relief because of the pain that I carry every day. You know, I wish the guy that killed Jeff would have came over here and killed me too. At least I don't have to live like I live or feel like I feel.
We've lost so many Jeffries, so many young people, and when that light is out, it is not just affecting Miami-Carol City Senior High. It is not just affecting Miami-Dade County. It is not just affecting Florida. It's affecting the whole United States and the world.
This is not thugs killing thugs. I mean, you have some great human beings that unfortunately become victims of violence. And many of the kids that are getting killed are great kids. Jeffrey Taylor was a great kid.
And I do miss him. I'd like to know what the plan, you know, why God took him. They say it'll be revealed. But I know he in heaven.
Heavenly Father, I'd like to say thank you. Thank you for allowing us to have Marky for 17 years, the 10 months and the 3 weeks and the 1 day. Thank you, Lord, for our angel Marky. And we'd like to say thank you, Heavenly Father. Amen.
Amen.
We love you, we do. We love you, we do. We love you, dear Marky. We love you, we do. I'm going to make your wish for you. Hey, Marky, happy birthday.
That's rough stuff right there. Eleazar says, where can I find this clip? It's in Black Coffee Channel news section from the Miami Herald. So the Miami Herald is where that's from. So this is why, you know, I don't care to even argue sometimes over who to vote for, because a problem like that is not going to be solved in the ballot box. Although public policy is very helpful and very important. But, you know, hearing a story like that, 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds killing one another in Miami, it's an Overton section, I believe. You know, this is why I pour my heart out in support
for
of things
Bloods,
like this.
Brits, MS-13, Sutrese, everybody out there that represents something. So put your weapons down and let's come to a table so we could talk peace.
That was the request North Carolina Latin Kings leader Jorge Cornell made during a news conference Monday. He wants gang leaders to get together for a discussion on how to end violence.
What I'm asking these leaders to do is, if you got one that's going to start trouble with the other, don't let those two, you know, let it get physical. And if it does, don't let it cause a war. Let's bring it to the attention of those leaders and let those leaders deal with their own.
Cornell was joined by church leaders, Pastor Nelson Johnson and Gregory Heaton, who gave their full support to the cause.
And so I want to commend Brother Jorge and the Latino Nation and all of those who have responded in the hope that this is merely a beginning and that together we can do a new thing.
Cornell says that he's already getting a good response from other gang leaders and hopes that today's message will encourage even more to come together.
Well, I'm hoping, you know, that we get some more responses and the more people that are willing to come to the table, and some of these gangs, nations, and associations, still, you know, more, the bigger the better. That's where we go from here. The next step is to sit down.
And Heaton says they will open their doors so that next step can be taken.
I want them to know that there will be places where they can gather and meet. We believe that that's the way to go.
In Greensboro, Kira Mathis, News 14, Carolina.
Now, again, I spoke to King J, Brother Jorge, who you heard speaking. We're in support of this. So if you want to get down, you can email me directly, cedric@blackcoffeechannel.com. We're in support of that. Not only on the level of black-brown unity, peace agreements between Latin Kings, Bloods and Crips, MS-13. There's problems all over the country with these groups, nations, and street organizations. So if you want to get involved, please do so.
Ending whackness in the name of blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.